Thank you for joining us, and we'll give a minute for that before we start the pro bono or the Board of Governors meeting.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. Well, I may start with at least our call to order and our prefatory remarks go into my president's report. Thank you, everyone. First of all, I know we have a long session today, a couple different portions of it. So thank you for sticking with us, but a lot of exciting initiatives and events and programs to talk about and report on. I'd like to give a brief overview kind of on what has been happening over the summer, which all has been really exciting. And I think the Board of Governors and pro bono staff, we've been working the DC Bar staff diligently towards some of the initiatives that I had outlined in the celebration of leadership and my remarks, and also my initial column in Washington Lawyer. As you remember, they are promoting access to justice and pro bono work, also supporting diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility throughout the bar, and supporting our voluntary bars and our DC bar communities. So an exciting development that I'd like to report on and express support from Bob and Darren for helping us to achieve this. We, at the Communities Committee meeting later this month, they are going to be voting on authorizing a pilot for a DC bar young lawyers community. We are so excited about this. We have been working together with the leadership of the Bar Association of DC, who many of you may know have had a young lawyer section since the beginning of the DC bar that was kind of set out as their territory. We have come to the conclusion that it would be to the benefit of both organizations as well as our young lawyers in general in the DC bar to launch a DC bar community that will work in coordination with the BADC's young lawyer section that will bring professional opportunities, networking to our young lawyers. So officially, our communities committee has to vote to launch that community. And then the bar staff will go forward and we'll work with BADC to launch it this year. And then I think we, if all goes well, we officially inaugurate it for the next bar fiscal year. But we're very, very excited about that. We also have been busy with our Committee on Arrangements, which is the committee that plans our bench bar conference that's coming up in the spring. So we're moving forward. We met yesterday. Our theme for the conference, we decided, is going to be somewhat along the lines. We may nip and tuck here and there and change the wording, but generally commemorating the 50-year anniversary of DC Home Rule Act, the district then and now. And our idea is it will be broader than the DC Home Rule Act. We will look into, activism in DC for the past 50 years, advancements we have made in diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. And we think that that will encompass a broad array of topics. And we are hoping that this will be a fabulous conference. As you may remember, the morning starts out with a plenary session and then kind of a keynote luncheon speaker. We, of course, work with the courts to support the whole conference, but they kind of set the agenda for the morning and the speaker. And then we will be kicking off an RFP process for the sessions. There'll be, I think, about 12 sessions that will run in the afternoon. And we typically send out RFPs to our voluntary bars, our DC bar communities, our CLE providers. So that process will be kicking off. So to the extent that you may have been involved in the past and you would like to be involved in a program through a voluntary bar or a DC bar community, please be on the lookout for that RFP when it comes out. We also later today, actually next in the consent agenda, but we will be appointing a nominations committee. I think it's a great committee. We are hoping that they will bring a lot of energy and a lot of good candidates to consider for the different positions. I would like to encourage this board as well to nominate and to reach out to candidates for Board of Governors and officer positions. You all are here because you have contacts throughout the DC Bar community and you are well known. And I think your outreach will do a lot to making sure that we have a robust group of candidates from which the nominations committee can put together their slate. So I hope you all will put that on your little list of things to do. We already actually have a DC Bar committee member who has said they are interested in running. So we already have a resume into the nominations committee. So it's never too soon to start an outreach. And even if you have someone in mind, this may not be the year, but setting the stage for possibly next year, it's never too early. And then a couple other, we have a busy fall of events, which is very exciting to be getting back in person to some events. We have in your kind of FYI tabs, a calendar of upcoming events and our upcoming board meetings and a list of when the voluntary bar leadership meetings are to which you are all invited. Charles and I will be there as ex officio, but we welcome any other members of the board who would like to join those meetings to please feel free. So a couple highlighted events that we would love to see the board at. And I think in general, just to step back and set the stage, one of the initiatives I'd like to encourage this board to move forward with is being present in our community. You know, we would like to support our voluntary bars and our DC bar communities. So if there are events that these organizations are holding to which you would like to participate or in which you feel we should have a DC bar presence, please by all means attend and let Charles and I know. He and I are going to try, and Chad as well, to attend as many events as we can. It is always wonderful the more board presence we have there. Our voluntary bars, our leaders really appreciate it. I zoomed into the first meeting of our legal ethics committee yesterday. I received so many emails from committee members saying how wonderful it was that I attended their meeting. So I think there's a lot of goodwill that we bring by showing up, by letting the different aspects of our DC bar, our broad DC bar community, know that we value the work they do and that we are here to support them. So along those lines, we have a busy 2 weeks coming up. Next Thursday, the 22nd, the Women's Bar is going to be hosting their Stars of the Bar event at DC Bar headquarters. So it's our kind of very own home turf. I think there are 4 Stars of the Bar that they honor, and one of them is our very own Amy Nelson, who just stepped off the Board of Governors last year and who is with the Whitman Walker Services Legal Clinic. We also have on Friday the 23rd, we have our Board of Governors training session on First Amendment challenges to mandatory bars. Hope to see you all there. We also will be sending out a poll for, we have a remaining Board of Governors training to schedule. So we were not able to find a time that worked for everyone over the summer. So please watch for that email and respond to the poll, and we'll try to set up as quickly as we can a date that works for the most people. Then, fun events. We have all the events are fun, actually, but this is really more social. We have our Board of Governors dinner, which will be at the DC Bar headquarters on our terrific rooftop on Saturday, the 24th at 9:30. Or excuse me, that's going to be in the evening. But we have, so I hope you all come. Spouses are invited. That it's a wonderful, just a social event where we can get together and spend some time in person. So I encourage you all to come and bring a guest if you are at all able to. And then actually earlier that day, we have the Pro Bono Center Board Basics A to Z, which is a 3-day boot camp that is alternate Saturdays. It's a wonderful kind of intro session, and not just for introductory, but to board members who have experience, just a refresher. It is virtual. If you miss the session, it will be recorded so you can go back and review it at your convenience. And here's a question to which I don't know the answer, so I'll toss it to Bob or Marg maybe. There is a fee for that, but we cover that for board members, don't we? Yes.
Yes, we will.
Okay. So, and how do people do that? Do they pay and ask for reimbursement?
If you'll just let us know that you want to register, we'll register you for the program so you don't have to worry about it.
Awesome. That's great. Terrific. Thank you, Bob, for that detail. Also coming up, and we hope you all will attend this, on Tuesday, October 18th at 5 p.m., we're going to have a joint celebration with the BADC of our 50th anniversary and the BADC's 150th anniversary. It will be at the ceremonial courtroom at the DC Court of Appeals. Chief Judge Anna Blackburn Rigsby will be there to welcome everyone. There will be a short panel, and then they'll be with past BADC and DC Bar presidents, bringing their insights, talking about how things have changed, how we look forward. And then there'll be plenty of time for networking afterwards. So I hope you attend. We do have limited capacity. I think it's 100 based on COVID restrictions at the court. The board will be comped. So we'd love for you to come. There will be shortly kind of a little preview registration for board members. And then any extra seats will be opened out to the public. So look for that in your email boxes. And I hope that you'll be able to join us. We also are planning another joint event, DC Bar Arts, Entertainment, Media, and Sports Law Section with the Women's Bar Association on November 15th. And this will be a look and a celebration of the 50th anniversary of Title IX of the Education Amendments. And that will be at our own DC Bar headquarters. So I definitely hope you'll be able to come. And I encourage, if folks who are aware of other events, voluntary bar events, DC Bar Communities events to which you'd like the board to know and try to attend, toward the end of our meetings, if you put them in the chat, just so you know, they don't interrupt the flow of the meetings. And we usually have a pretty heavy schedule of items to discuss, but that will get the information out there, and hopefully board members will attend. One event in particular I'd like to highlight, because it's coming up soon before our next board meeting, and because neither Chad nor Charles and I can attend, the Washington Foreign Law Society is having their annual gala on Wednesday, September 28th. Charles and Chad and I, with Bob and Darren, will be up in New York for the Mid-Atlantic Bar Conference sessions. So we will not be able to attend. I received an invitation from the president of the Washington Foreign Law Society. He knows that, regretfully, I won't be able to attend, but if anyone here would like to kind of attend in our stead, please let me know, and I will make sure that, you know, I connect you up with the president and that we have a DC Bar Board of Governors presence at that event. We also, to help you decide what events in the community you'd like to attend, the DC Bar Voluntary Bar kind of webpage of our website has an events section. So right now there are few events in there, but we are hoping after our first voluntary bar leadership meeting of the year, we hope to encourage our voluntary bars to post their upcoming events on that website so that hopefully all these events will be together in one place that will be a little bit easier for folks to navigate and understand what's coming up. And certainly whenever we have our Board of Governors meetings prior to different events, we will let you know about those as well. A couple of other events that are coming up on the horizon are our practice management committee is hosting Law 360 tomorrow. It is all virtual. It is, you know, A to Z, how to run a business, how to, you know, how to navigate your law office. So that will be tomorrow. The DC Bar is hosting the ABA Committee on Legal Assistance Providers. So that will be next week. It's here in DC at the Shoreham. I will be bringing remarks. And then just another kind of fun thing that Charles and I did last week, the Council for Court Excellence ran a Juror Appreciation Week. And they invited folks to come in to an open house to sign thank you notes for jurors. And so Charles and I spent a couple hours down there signing notes, and it was really fun. And it was great to connect with the leaders of CCE. I think it's next week as well, Charles. We are also going to be meeting with the Affordable Law Firm. They have an annual training for their new trainees and new lawyers coming in. And so they've invited Charles and I to come and, you know, welcome their new lawyers, encourage them to get involved in the DC Bar and DC Bar activities. That will be a really fun event that we're going to be doing. And I think with that, and I'm sorry, that was a very long report, but a lot was going on over the summer. I am happy to take any questions. And if there are none, we'll roll into the rest of our agenda, starting with the consent agenda.
I have a quick question. First, I just want to say I'm very excited to hear about the young lawyers community. I have been trumpeting that since I counted as a young lawyer. So I'm very excited to hear that that's in the works. Is there going to be any process? I know, for example, the ABA, if you're within a certain age bracket or years of practice, you automatically are included as a member. Is that something that's under consideration here?
Yeah, I think there's a lot under consideration. I'll kick it to Darren maybe in a minute to see what his thoughts are. But I think we are just at the planning, initial planning stages. We need to get approved by the communities committee. I think it's next week or in 2 weeks. And then, we will start kind of the official planning. So Darren, any thoughts on that?
Just to say to reiterate what you just said, which is everything is under consideration. This is as I said, a once in a multi-generation opportunity. And we want to, and thanks to Ellen, our ambassador, who in the first few weeks of her presidency did more than I think we could have even expected for her for the rest of the year. But this is just really exciting stuff. And Courtney, everything's on the table. I had that same thought that you had about just including everybody. We want to make it, everybody in a certain age group. We want to make it a pipeline from the law students community to the young lawyers community to all of our other communities. That's the thinking here. So stay tuned.
Well, if there's anything I can do to help, please feel free to loop me in.
Thank you, Courtney. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Courtney. We really appreciate that. And if anyone has any thoughts, as Darren said, everything's on the table right now. So feel free to reach out to me or Darren, and we will welcome any suggestions that you may have. I can't echo Courtney and Darren how excited we are to be having this opportunity to launch a young lawyers community. As Darren said, I think it was two or three years ago, we started the law students community, and this will be a just wonderful kind of next step for folks coming out of that law students community and into the young lawyers community. So reach out to us with any thoughts or suggestions, and stay tuned. We hope to have a lot more coming on that. All right, any other questions, thoughts? Oh, I thought I saw a light up, but I think it was just Bob's in the conference room screen. All right, the consent agenda. The consent agenda consists of the minutes of our July meeting, also committee appointments for the budget and nominations committee. As I mentioned, the budget committee is, BPR has come back with a different designee that they would like for the budget committee, and that's the genesis behind that appointment for that committee. Are there any questions, objections to the consent agenda? All right, hearing none, the consent agenda is approved. I don't know if Sean has been able to join.
Not yet.
Yeah, Do you want to wait, or Marv, just go ahead?
I think we should let Marv go ahead. Sean must have had some kind of a conflict.
Yeah, it's unlike him not to be here without notice. So Marv, if you would graciously take the reins again, we would appreciate it.
I will do my best.
Thank you.
If they can put up the PowerPoint presentation. And I'll stand by.
Hold, please.
That's right.
To quote somebody famous.
All right. So I'm going to report on the Bar and the Pro Bono Center annual financial results from the last fiscal year. And you all should have gotten the meeting materials, which goes into it in much more detail. Today's presentation is going to be slightly different than what you're used to. We're going to provide a slightly different view instead of kind of digging into some of the numbers, since those are already part of the financial reports that you've gotten in preparation for this meeting. But we do want to give you some takeaways that you can take with you when you talk to some of our members. And these are going to be some very quick, high-level takeaways, again, that you can use. So if you can go to the... Thank you. All right. So if there's one thing that you can take away from this presentation is that the DC Bar and the Pro Bono Center are in excellent financial health. You know, and as I mentioned during the Pro Bono Center Treasurer's Report, they delivered a surplus. We have increased member engagement. We have maintained our operational excellence, and we have practiced sound financial stewardship. And again, this is through a second year of a global pandemic. We think that this is due to very steady leadership. And then of course, some innovation and dedication by the bar staff, which has allowed us to maintain this strong fiscal position. So we're gonna dig into a little bit of the details and find out why. So if you can go to the next slide. Okay, throughout the last year, the bar has stayed focused on its mission to serve its members so that they can serve the community. We have adapted to this virtual environment to not only maintain, but also expand our level of service to our members. From everything that we are hearing, our members are very engaged. And as you know, we say this every year, 49% of our members don't even actually have to have a DC Bar license for their job, but they join and they maintain their membership because of the benefits that we offer, the services, the programs, the opportunities, and of course, the support. To that point, the membership is stable and growing. Participation in our virtual programs, classes, and events continue to grow. Our members continue to be very generous, beating the budget for contributions to the Pro Bono Center by 13%. All of this is an example and evidence of a healthy level of member engagement. And again, a testament to the work of the board and the staff. And one of the major reasons why the bar is in such excellent health today. So another major contributor to our financial health is our ability to maintain operational excellence even through these economically challenging times, including our current inflationary environment. The bar ended the year with a $3 million surplus. And this marks the sixth consecutive year of surplus. One contributing factor was significant expense savings related to all things related to the pandemic. That includes food and beverage, supplies, travel, and of course, the building management costs. But we also saw some significant growth in non-license fee revenue through sponsorships of our events and programs and affinity partnerships developed by our membership staff. We have also worked with our tenants in the building to ensure their ability to continue to serve the local community. And we have added a new tenant, the College of William and Mary. So because of our increased member engagement and operational success, we also have been able to maximize the impact of the Pro Bono Center during a really critical time of need. The Pro Bono Center revenue, as I had mentioned previously, was over 20% better than budget. This is in part, again, to what I had mentioned earlier about the grants and the contributions. But as I noted in slide two, the contributions exceeded budget by 13%. The staff of the Pro Bono Center also found expense savings throughout the year. And again, as I mentioned, had an operational surplus of $750,000. This is solid financial footing for the Pro Bono Center. as they continue to support and provide critical legal services for those who can't do it on their own. All right, so this is how we ended the year. The bar's current financial health is again due to steady financial practices and stewardship, diversification of our revenue opportunities, and effectively using our resources. And then again, because of these efforts, we had a change in net assets of $7.2 million. That is the operational surplus of $3 million that I talked about earlier. And I'll talk about the other components in a minute. The operational surplus helped boost our net assets. And then we also had a gain on the swap. And there is a significant amount of detail if you really want to know about swaps in the memo that came out with the financial report. And as I mentioned when we were talking about the pro bono center, the investment portfolio for the DC bar did not do well either. And out of the four of the last 6 months in fiscal year 22, we saw a downturn. So we ended up with a $2.3 million loss on our investments. But the good news is, as Ellen pointed out, it's mostly unrealized. So as the market rebounds, we should be seeing a increase in our portfolio. And then another factor that's impacting our net assets, again, was the swap. And this was the adjustment to the prepayment penalty for our building mortgage. And as a reminder, the bar would only pay this penalty if we decided to prepay the mortgage before its maturity date in June of 2031. And normally, Sean would say at this point, which there is no plan to do. However, you will hear more about this from Bob in the executive session. So that's the teaser for you all to hang on until the very end. The value of this liability decreased by $6.6 million, which is reflected as a gain on the income statement. As of June 30th, we had no prepayment penalty, but we had a gain of $126,000. In other words, if we had prepaid the swap on June 30th, the bank would have given us $126,000. So all of these increases, the operational surplus, the gain on the swap, enabled us to build back our reserves, which is, of course, as you know, critically important for maintaining the fiscal soundness of the bar's finances. Our reserves also provide us with a safety net in the event of something catastrophic, which is, again, vitally important to maintaining a healthy reserves balance. And then for the pro bono center, their net assets, as I said earlier, grew by $100,000 due to their operational surplus. And that was netted against their investment loss of $650,000. So despite the pandemic, despite our current inflationary environment, the bottom line of both the DC bar and the pro bono center are still solid, providing, again, outstanding services to our members and the community. We're doing more to enhance access to justice through the pro bono center. We're remaining fiscally strong and mission focused. And ultimately, we are well positioned for future growth in members and in services, and continue to lead the way as the nation's largest unified bar. And that concludes Sean's report.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for that excellent, really positive and thorough report. Are there any questions from the board for Mark? All right, seeing none, we then will move to Bob for the CEO's report.
All right, well, thanks, Ellen. I do want to start off my report by just saying how grateful I am to have the finance team that I have, because Marg, you know, under Matt and with everybody else there, they are the reason you just received that report. This doesn't happen to many other bar associations in the country. I mean, especially during the pandemic, where virtually every bar association saw huge hits to their financial picture and the downturn in their events. I mean, we really did an amazing amount of good work this past year. And those financial results that you saw are really due to the excellent management and guidance by Marg and her staff. So again, I want to say thank you very much, because they're the ones who enabled us to do all of that. On an operational basis, the bar and the staff continue to operate on a hybrid basis. So some folks in the building, some folks working from home. We do not have any minimum number of days mandated to be in the building. Every department and division works it out themselves. We trust folks to get their job done no matter where they are. Of course, they will come in to staff in-person events, do team building and other events. We are going to start make a little bit of a change to the procedures to get into the building, to relax them a little bit. We still have a vaccine mandate, and we're going to have mask mandate in the public areas of the building, but we are going to make it a little bit easier for folks to show proof of vaccination. We'll continue to return safe for the staff and for any, for example, board members who come in more frequently, who don't want to have to find their copies or pictures of their vaccination card, but guests and visitors will simply be able to show it at the door and come on in. And that'll make it a little bit easier. And we will eliminate the screening questions, since we're not quite sure how valuable they are at the end of the day. And people generally will choose not to come into the building if they're not feeling well. So in the coming weeks, we're gonna modify that a little bit. For those of you who use ReturnSafe, this will mean that each day when you open it up, if your vaccination information is already loaded, it will just pop up with a green check mark and you won't have to go through all of those questions. Ellen went through a very impressive and robust list of upcoming events, so I'm not going to recap them, but I do want to tell you that the bar building is going to be hosting the International Institute of Law Association Chief Executives, which is the international CEOs and EDs of the bars around the world. And that's going to be in this building later in the month, or in October, that is. And so it's an opportunity really for us to showcase who we are, and we'll have folks from several dozen bars around the country. Ellen mentioned before also the COLAP conference, which is kind of a big deal. It's the ABA's National Conference for Lawyers Assistance Programs. And I know that each of you is very committed to lawyer wellness, and Denise Perme and others on our staff are gonna be presenting and attending this conference. It's kind of a big deal to have it in Washington, D.C. We pushed pretty hard to make it a focal point, because we are so committed to lawyer wellness. And so it's going to be from September 20th through the 22nd, as Ellen mentioned, at the Omni. In your materials, you're going to see a number of committee reports, and I hope that you have a chance to take a look at them if you haven't already done so, for the Client Security Fund, Legal Ethics, and the Practice Management Advisory Service. As you know, during the course of the year, you will receive some reports in person and some just by written report. We sort of move these around over the course of the years. Today, you're going to get the CLE report, for example, it live and in person from Julianne. You will also be receiving an email requesting your vote for a number of other committee appointments during the month of October. We've been doing this now. We did this last year. We'll do it again this year. There are a number of sort of, I don't say standard, but normal changeover committee appointments, many of whom are incumbents. And rather than load up all of your materials and try to jam it in for the September meeting, we'll give it to you in a separate package for an email vote in October. Of course, if you have any questions, we can always do it in the November live meeting or a special meeting. But I just wanted to let you know you'll be getting that email with some committee appointment recommendations. Most of those terms, by the way, begin on November 1st. Also in your materials, you are going to see a list of projects in support of the strategic plan. As you know, the DC Bar has a 5-year strategic plan, which sets forth our strategic priorities and objectives, and the current plan runs through 2025. Every fiscal year, we identify certain projects and activities that we're going to undertake in support of that plan. And you're going to find that on that list in your materials, 18 projects that we've identified that specifically to focus on during the course of this year, each of which supports one or more of the strategic priorities. And we're going to report back to you on a quarterly basis on how we're doing with these projects. And when I say we, I mean Ray List, our Director of Business Strategy and Risk Management. He monitors this during the course of the year. And of course, at the end of the year, we'll give you a final report on how we stuck the landing. If you have any questions about the projects that we've got on the list, I'm happy to answer them either now or in the future. Just please let me know. And then finally, I do want to start a new practice in these board meetings. And that's to highlight a member benefit. You know that you all get the question periodically, I pay $324 for my license fues. What am I getting for my bar dues? And the truth is they get a ton of services, right? LAP services, they get legal ethics hotline, they have the practice management advisory service, client security funds available, the attorney-client arbitration board, a million things that we do for our members day in and day out. But of course, they want to know exactly what do we do for them. What benefits do we give them? So I'm going to try to give you each month one benefit that you can pull off the top of your head if you need to. So one of our affinity partners is USI Affinity, which provides insurance products for all of our members at a discount. So they get a great deal on insurance products. They work with more than 400 associations, and they've got 50 years working with attorneys. They have exclusive offers for the DC Bar members, and their plans can be customized for their particular practice area. They have excellent customer service. Our members let us know how well their service is, and they routinely report that it's excellent. They have a lot of really interesting benefits and products, one of which I thought was really interesting. It's called fee suit avoidance. In the event that you have a client who has an outstanding fee and they refuses to pay their fee, instead of suing for it, the insurance company will give you a one-time payment of up to $10,000 to reimburse you for your lost client fee so as not to have to bring a lawsuit against the client, which will then trigger a malpractice claim against the lawyer, which would be way more expensive to resolve, which I thought was a really interesting way to try to avoid malpractice claims. So again, if your members, as you're talking to them out there, say, hey, what does my bar do for me? Say, well, we give you tons of member benefits, including this really cool insurance program. You should check it out. Go to the website because there's more than 30 affinity partners on there, and they all have great deals exclusively for DC Bar members. David Chu, I hope I did you justice. David, by the way, is responsible for negotiating, he and his team, all of these increased member benefits. And as Mark pointed out, we, as the bar, are the beneficiaries of a significantly increased affinity partner revenue stream this past year. Hundreds of thousands of dollars more this year than we did last year because of partnerships such as this. And so every month you're going to get one of these little commercials. Any questions for me?
I'll call it a PSA more than a commercial. It's well done.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. That's good.
Thanks, Bob. That's terrific. And thank you for highlighting those benefits, because I do think, you know, for some of us, especially if we're in large firms, we may not focus on that as much. And they are very important benefits to a large number of our members. So thank you. Any questions for Bob? All right. Now, I think Rob is probably not ready to join us. Is that right? More like around 1 o'clock?
That's right, Ellen. He said he'd join as soon after 1 p.m. as he could. He had back-to-back meetings.
Great. Well, I see that Julianne is here. So
I am.
Hello, Julianne. Welcome. If you are ready to present the report of the Continuing Legal Education Committee, we would be delighted to hear from you.
Thank you. And I want to just say personally, welcome to Ellen. I don't know if you remember, Ellen, but you and I served on a panel about attorney billing, I think. It seems like 100 years ago now, but I was delighted to see your election, and I know you're going to do a wonderful job for the for the bar.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. So this is the report of the CLE committee, which I have been privileged to be chair of. Fiscal year 2021 was a very good year for the DC Bar CLE program. In three words, if I could use to describe and sum up our year, it would be flexible, adaptable, and collaborative. The CLE program remained flexible and adaptable as we entered our second and third year of the global pandemic and remote work. We continue to offer live online classes using the Zoom platform. We offered it at different times, morning, lunchtime, and evening, to accommodate both our faculty and the attendees' schedules. Most classes were recorded and subsequently offered as on demand for those who could not make live classes. And that flexibility and adaptability proved invaluable as lawyers continued to adjust to remote work and figure out how to find the right work-life balance. Despite the pandemic and remote work, though, CLE program also expanded its collaboration with outside organizations and with DC Bar committees to offer some highly successful and well-attended programs. During the past year, the CLE program partnered with the American College of Legal Medicine, the Government Blockchain Association, the National Association of Attorneys General, and the TEGE Exempt Organizations Council. It partnered with the American Red Cross and International Law Community, the Law Practice Management Community, and the Law Student Community, among others. And lastly, we held special skills-based trainings for a few government agencies, the Federal Trade Commission, which was deposition skills, and the Department of Homeland Security, which was legal writing. All told, the CLE program offered 224 live online courses covering 22 practice areas, which was just two classes fewer than the previous fiscal year. Of the 224 courses, 74 were completely new, which is about 33% of the total offering. New courses are very important in CLE in that they improve lawyer competence by offering training in developing practice areas and allows us to attract new registrants and expand program choices for our returning attendees. Many of the new classes covered areas such as nonprofit law, technology, ethics, international law, health law, to name a few. So how many lawyers attended our CLEs? More than 7,100 attorneys registered for CLE courses during fiscal year 21-22, which is a slight decrease of 6% from the previous year when we had 7,500 attendees. And we think the reason for that includes attendance at 12 accredited sessions offered at the 2020 conference commemorating the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which I also had the privilege of participating in, and the 18 accredited sessions from the Judicial and Bar Conference on the changing legal landscape from the pandemic. So of that 7,100 attendees, our accreditation team was very busy processing more than 5,000 CLE certificates. And as in the past, the most requested states were Virginia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, and California. More than 290 DC Bar members serve as volunteer faculty members this year. And of that, 103, slightly more than one third, were new faculty. Recruiting new faculty and ensuring that they have a positive experience is CLE's way to increase member engagement. A strategic goal for the CLE committee remains increasing diversity in our CLE faculty. CLE program continues to conduct outreach to various voluntary and affinity bars to identify subject matters to teach our courses. So we're very proud of our on-demand program. The CLE program maintained a robust catalog of 126 on-demand courses, and we sold 1,440 on-demand titles in this last fiscal year, which is a 22% increase from the previous fiscal year. The increase in demand show of in-demand sales shows that attorneys appreciate, want, and need the flexibility in completing CLE on their own time. And the CLE program has more than met their challenge by offering so many diverse on-demand offerings. Now, we offer lots of programs, but are people satisfied with the program? And I'm really proud to say that during fiscal year 2021-22, our CLE courses rated an average of 4.7 out of 5, which is a little higher than last year's 4.6 rating for CLE courses. So people who attend our classes really enjoy them. Majority of courses rated excellent overall. The committee thinks that the increase may be due to the fact that attorneys have become accustomed to online programming, and the volunteer faculty has really worked hard to make the online programs as interactive as possible. And we broke up some of the day-long programs to avoid having attendees sitting and staring at their laptops for too long. So kudos to the many, many people who participated. And again, it's a wonderful way, if people are looking for a way to be more active within the bar, becoming a speaker and presenting and teaching what you know is a wonderful way to do it. As I mentioned earlier, the CLE program partnered with other organizations, and I'll just highlight a few of them. I mentioned a program that we partnered with the American College of Legal Medicine to hold a 3-day virtual program for legal and medical professionals. It focused on the most current and critical issues confronting the field of legal medicine. So these would include things such as mask mandates, spreading and mitigating the spread of disease in correctional institutions, the opioid crisis, and many others. Program had 136 attendees and received an overall rating of 4.7 out of 5.0 in the evaluations. We also partnered with the National Association of Attorneys General to hold a 4-part series on NAAG's anti-corruption practice manual. Those sessions focused on bid rigging and public contracts, election crimes, bribery and illegal influence, and police corruption. That series had between 39 and 51 regular attendees and received an overall rating of 4.6 out of 5.0 in the evaluations. Finally, I mentioned the TEGE exempt organization. This year, CLE and TEGE held the exempt organizations update. It was one of the first hybrid programs for the CLE program since the bar's reopening, meaning we had both in-person and online options for attendees. 16 people showed up for the in-person programs and 206 attended remotely. There's still a big question about whether folks are ready to come back to the in-person programs, but the CLE program will continue to offer hybrid programs and be as flexible as can be to meet members' needs. There's good news about finances. Based on the preliminary financial statement for the fiscal year, the CLE program ended fiscal year 2021-22 with a healthy surplus of $39,953. Our overall revenue was lower than it was projected by at $180,000. But there were significant cost savings in professional fees, printing, meeting rooms, supplies, and travel offsets the lower revenue figure. Investment income was down significantly. It sounds like there may be a theme here. It was down by $121,000, as anyone can look at their own investments and realize that, you know, we live and fall with the market. But overall, the CLE program remains financially sound. So in conclusion, 2021-22 was a good year for the CLE program. We will remain flexible and adaptable and collaborative to ensure that members and the legal community have access to fully accredited and high quality programs. And on a personal note, I wanted to note that Patrick Coyne and I will be leaving our roles as chair and vice chair. Unfortunately, this is term limits for me. And it has been a privilege and a pleasure to serve this bar and to work with Dennis and Brendan and Suhana and the rest of his team. They really are a highly energetic, highly motivated team, and the bar is really lucky to have them, and I'm lucky to have had the privilege of working with them. I'm hoping that this is not goodbye, though. Some of you know, I've come back to the CLE committee a few times, and I would love to see to work with Dennis again. If he wants me back, I'd serve in a heartbeat. And so this is not really goodbye, but see you soon. And that concludes our report.
Thank you so much, Julianne, for that just so thorough and positive report. And thank you so much for your service on the CLE committee. We will miss you. And as you say, I hope it is just a short hiatus and not a farewell. So thank you for everything that you've done. And questions from the board for Julianne.
I just wanted to also give kudos for, you know, I follow social media, LinkedIn, and I think CLE aspect of our DC board did a fabulous job in marketing our CLE courses. I worked as an assistant director of CLE in my alma mater, and I know the nuts and bolts of applying for CLE, all the administrative stuff. So kudos for them to market. I think they do an excellent job on offering courses, even though DC is not a mandatory CLE jurisdiction, but the variety of courses that they offer, the subject matter. So I just also wanted to point that out. And I just had a very brief question for Julianne. I was wondering, since the pandemic, I know bars, because the rules comes from the Supreme Court of every jurisdiction, has there been a shift in terms of, you know, getting a course being accredited online, easing on the attendance, all these specific regulations that the courts require in order for a CLE to be offered, and also the attorney can obtain CLE credit in their respective jurisdictions, for example, New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania that you mentioned?
I'm going to answer in part, and then Dennis may very well have something to add. Certainly during the pandemic, during the height of the pandemic, many of the state bars were easing their requirements. Many had restrictions on the number of online classes you could take or the number of hours you could take. And so those restrictions went away to a large extent. I'm not exactly sure what the status is of that right now and whether that may be something here to stay, since it's something that has been, you know, expanded already. I also know that during the pandemic, there was an explosion of CLE opportunities. And so in some ways it became a little bit, took us a little longer to get some of our courses accredited because the states were doing their own programs. And there became so many more online programs available. And with the restrictions lifted, were more available to members to take. So I think it's a little bit of everything. And we really met the challenge by making sure the faculty was comfortable. And I think I told this story last year, but I did a program and we had a faculty member who is quite a distinguished professor who had never done Zoom and never presented that way before. And the staff really was wonderful in terms of helping with the slides, helping faculty get comfortable with the program. And I think it's a work in progress. I think it's something that we will continue to progress at. Our satisfaction numbers will show you that most people are pretty happy with what we're doing. Dennis, is there something you can add to that?
No, not really. I think you covered it, Julianne. I will say that a number of states that had in-person requirements have sort of eased that sort of, you know, that regulation. They're now equating sort of live webinars or simultaneous webcasts as sort of the sort of live requirement or in-person requirement. And so, you know, I think some states are adapting just to the conditions.
Thank you. That's a very good question.
The only other thing I would, and thank you, Julianne, and thank you so much for your service. The only other thing I don't want the group to miss here is that with all these great numbers that we've had, Dennis has actually been competing against all of the other jurisdictions that don't have a mandatory CLE, I mean, that do have a mandatory CLE requirement. We are one of only a few jurisdictions that do not have that. And so we're competing with all of those cottage industries everywhere that has a mandatory CLE requirement. So kudos to you, Dennis, and your team. Again, really nice work.
Yep, thank you. And just to add to Darren, I'm sure that we are competing as well against the larger law firms who do a lot of their CLE on demand in-house. So, you know, again, just echoing the great work, Julianne, Dennis, and your staff that you have done. We really appreciate it. Diane, you have a question.
Okay, well, this is my pride and joy of this committee. So I'm a little biased, but I think we have to compliment the committee and Dennis and the rest of the staff, because a few years ago, before the pandemic, the committee pivoted and really got new technology in place to make our webinars better. And so we were able to really hit the ground running when the pandemic hit, and we weren't a mess with like, oh my God, how do we teach online? But since then, it has been because of the staff's work so refined and improved upon. And Julianne is too modest to mention, but I will, that the, and Dennis too, that our ratings are typically higher for in-person classes than for webinar classes. So for them to be 4.7 out of 5 when we're doing them all online, I mean, like, you really just can't get much better than that. And the bar was so high to begin with. So I just thought that Dennis and Julianne's work and successes should, in that regard, should also be highlighted. 4.7 for everything being online is incredible.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you for highlighting that, Diane. It's helpful to have that historical perspective that you can bring. So thank you for that. All right. Any other questions? All right. Well, again, thank you so much for your great work and the great product that you put forth on behalf of the bar. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you to the Board of Governors for the wonderful service and the tireless service that you put in on behalf of all of us.
Well, thank you. All right, I think we are still now a little bit before one. So I think we can go ahead to the next item, which is an action item, a voting item for the board. Roger could not be with us. He has work obligations and couldn't join us, but I hope everyone read the memorandum that was in our materials for today. I will just briefly summarize the screening committee's work. We had a vacancy on the Commission on Judicial Disabilities and Tenure that came about because of the passing of Jeannie Sanford. It is a vacancy that the head of the commission let Bob and the board know that they, you know, if we had a good candidate, there was a lot of work coming this fall and they really would like to fill this spot sooner rather than later. So the screening committee got together and put forth not only an announcement on the website, but through various mediums, we reached out. There were notices, marketing efforts that went out. As members of the Board of Governors, you saw what went out to each of the Board of Governors members. It was sent out to the leadership of the voluntary bars. It was sent out to DC Bar past presidents. It was sent out to the leaders in our DC Bar communities. Members of the screening committee, as well as Bob, reached out personally to a number of potential candidates. We extended the deadline for resumes by a week. And at the end of the day, two persons submitted applications, Lloyd Liu and Amy Bess, both of whom the screening committee felt were excellent candidates for this position. And after reviewing the resumes of both of the candidates and both of these candidates were known to various members of the screening committee. And so the committee decided unanimously to recommend that Amy Bess be appointed to fulfill the remainder of Jeannie Sanford's term on the JDTC, in part because of Amy's perhaps a little more tenure in the practice of law and perhaps a little more varied experience in terms of in the courts and volunteering in various capacities in the DC bar community. So she is the recommended appointee from the screening committee. And then the committee met with Kira Jarrett, who is the executive director of the DC Bar Foundation and heard Kira's recommendations for her. I think there are 5 spots that are open on the DC Bar Foundation. And the screening committee considered the materials presented, considered Kira's recommendations, and recommended in favor of the 5 candidates. And they are listed in the screening committee memo. And I think you have their resumes as well as Amy and Lloyd's resume. So with that, I am happy to entertain any questions or a vote to approve the screening committee's recommendations. If there are no questions, do I have a vote to approve the screening committee's, a motion to approve the screening committee's recommendations?
So moved.
Thank you, Charles. Is there a second?
Second.
I see a second. All in favor, please say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, please say nay. All right. Thank you very much. The screening committee's recommendations are approved unanimously. And let's look at timing. Should we keep going, Bob? I guess we should. We still have about 10 minutes. Okay. The next item is also an item for action by the Board of Governors. As you may recall, we talked about at our July meeting, as well as I discussed at the Celebration of Leadership. And we had a terrific report from the community's DEIA working groups regarding how they had developed recommendations at the community's level and what they were doing at the community's level for DEIA. And I think as a group, the board decided that we would like to kind of raise the work of the communities up to a DC Bar wide level to appoint a task force that would continue this work and would develop recommendations for the Board of Governors to consider regarding advancing DEIA at the board level. To that end, we have put together a draft charge, which is, I guess, the second page of the memorandum that was in your materials, which I hope everyone had a chance to review. And then there is also a list of individuals that I'm recommending that we appoint to the DEIA task force. We have a few additional members to whom we are potentially talking to and a potential additional co-chair. And there may be a couple other members that those chairs would like to appoint. So we may come back to you, as Bob said, for interim appointments between this and our November meeting. But right now, what you have before you is the suggested list of members for the task force and the charge. As you will see, designated by an asterisk, those are individuals who served on the main working group of the DC Bar Communities DEIA working group and felt very important that they continue in this role as we raise it up to the bar-wide level to see what initiatives we can put forward. So I think with that, I will entertain any questions on the charge or the list of potential task force members. And hearing no questions, I'm also happy to entertain a motion to approve the list of the task force and also the charge for the task force. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion has been made and a second to approve the task force members and the task force charge. All in favor, please say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
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 Any opposed, please signify by saying nay. All right, thank you. The motion passes unanimously. Wonderful. Okay. I hesitate to go into executive session, Bob, but should we go?
I think we can. The executive session has very discrete things. And so when Rob's available, we can just break from that.
Okay. That sounds great.
We'll monitor the list for when Rob joins.
Oh, actually, Chad has asked for a few minutes for a comfort break. Would people like that? Or do you want to keep pressing through to grab something to drink? Or
either way.
Or do you want to press through?
We can't make Chad suffer. I mean, he is an immediate.
I'm just saying, if you got a couple of minutes to vamp.
We have a few minutes. Would people like a chance to get a drink and step away, or do you want to power through?
Take a break. Take a break.
Take a break. Okay, let's take a break. Five minutes would take us roughly to about, you want to just say 1 o'clock?
1 o'clock, yeah.
Okay, let's be back on our screens at 1 o'clock. And if Rob is with us, we'll take him first. If not, we'll go into executive session. All right, thank you, everybody. See you all back at 1. Okay, I have 1 o'clock. We have folks gathered back looking for pictures for live faces as opposed to pictures. All right, I think we've got folks back. We are now gonna move into executive session. And as Bob said, when Rob arrives, we will flip out of executive session to hear his report in the full session. So the first item on our agenda is our consent agenda, which are the draft minutes for our July and August executive sessions. Are there any objections to approving the consent agenda? Okay, hearing none, the consent agenda is approved. Is Iram with us? Yes, there's Iram. Iram, would you?
Thank you. The ABA House of Delegates met in Chicago this year on August 8th and 9th. The House approved 39 resolutions, defeated one, and a number were withdrawn. So let me give you a little background on the House of Delegates. Many of you know this. The House is the policymaking body of the ABA. It's composed of representatives of state and local bars, ABA sections, some national organizations, and a few others. The ABA has a significant lobbying operation. It files amicus briefs, but it cannot file anything unless it has policy on the issue. And the policy-making body is the House of Delegates. So the resolutions of the House of Delegates are significant because they empower the ABA to lobby to make public statements and to file amicus briefs. So among the resolutions that were adopted were one resolution 402, which reaffirmed the ABA policy against the sharing of legal fees with non-lawyers and against non-lawyer ownership or control of law firms. Now, this is contrary to the practice and the rules in the District of Columbia, which allows lawyers to practice in a partnership with non-lawyers under certain conditions. The final resolution reflected a bit of a compromise in that it reaffirmed a resolution from a couple of years ago calling on jurisdictions to consider regulatory innovations that could improve the affordability and quality of civil legal services. So that was expected to be an enormous controversy that was worked out by this compromise. Resolution 504 urged state and local governments and federal government to create and expand laws on cyber stalking, to require investigation of those crimes, and to allow for a private right of action. That passed unanimously. Resolution 604 adopted 10 principles for reducing mass incarceration. That was prompted by the 2 million incarcerated people in the United States. 25% of the world's incarcerated people in a country that has less than 5% of the world's population. That number's increased 500% in the last 40 years, and the impact is racially disparate. Black men are 6 times more likely to be incarcerated than white men. So this resolution focused on ways to reduce that number. At the end of the session, we got to several resolutions that many expected would generate controversy, but in fact, they spurred a little debate, and these largely arose out of the Dobbs decision overruling Roe versus Wade and the state laws that have been enacted or proposed in the aftermath of that decision. So let me run through those resolutions quickly. Resolution 804 opposed the imposition of liability for assisting or providing support to a person having an abortion. 805 opposed restrictions on access to contraception or contraceptive care. 806 supported the Respect for Marriage Act proposed in Congress to codify marriage equality for same-sex and interracial couples. 807 opposed criminal prosecution of any healthcare provider for performing an abortion or assisting someone having an abortion. And Resolution 808 opposed and urged repeal of statutes that provide bounties to private citizens who seek to enforce the law so as to evade federal court review of the law's constitutionality. That was targeted at the Texas bounty statute, but in fact also encompasses the California statute that was enacted that that relates to gun control. The ABA continues to struggle to stabilize its finances. As of June, the organization had a $9.8 million operating deficit of the year, which was actually $3.1 million less than was budgeted, but about $7 million more than the same period the prior year. That's out of an overall revenue number of about $160 million. They budgeted for a deficit again the next fiscal year. Obviously, this can't go on forever running deficits year after year. But for all its foibles, the ABA continues to serve a critically important function as the voice of the legal profession. And in fact, with democracy at greater risk now than at any time in memory, it's never been more important to have an organization that, of lawyers that can speak out on behalf of the rule of law. So that covers the House of Delegates. I'm happy to answer any questions about these resolutions or any others or any other ABA issue.
Thank you, Rob. We always look forward to you coming and giving us an update on the ABA annual meetings. It's always great to have you join us. Does anyone have any questions for Rob? I have one. Rob, as you say, the ABA can't continue to run deficits every year. Have they any plans to address that kind of trend going forward?
They do have plans. They were thrown into a bit of a disarray by the pandemic, but the ABA lowered its dues substantially. And they're waiting to see what the impact of that reduction is going to be. The ability to assess the impact was impinged by the pandemic, which affected the membership numbers. But I think they have cut expenses enormously, and it really is a dues question. We'll see whether the reduction in dues spurs an increase in membership. It appears to at the lower levels, but they continue to have a problem retaining people at the upper seniority of the profession.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. It sounds like the pandemic may have derailed efforts a bit, so they're kind of waiting to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions for Rob? All right. Well, thank you so much, Rob. We always enjoy hearing from you, and we very much appreciate your leadership of our delegation in the House of Delegates.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. And now we will move back into executive session and continue along with our agenda. And next up, I think, boss, and I'll give, whoops. Okay. Recording in progress. And I will give just a little bit of a background. In the past, we have had the executive committee basically work with Bob to set goals for him and his staff for the year. typically the ghouls, I understand, have not been brought before the board. Oh, Karen, you have to go? No?
It says recording in process. Oh. This is an executive.
Yeah, let me see if I can stop it.
You got to stop the recording.